missing this.
When that didn't materialise, I think both Paulie and myself probably looked at each other and kind of thought, what next?
Then get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Hello there, you're welcome along to the show this evening. Ciarán McGeehan with us this hour. She has been in scintillating form post-lockdown, two national records broken and counting. We'll talk to her around 7:30. After 8 o'clock, Roscommon's Paul Early is with us to promote a charity cycle. We'll chat to him as well about his playing days with Roscommon, time over in Australia and his late great brother as well. Harry Maguire then, Pat Nevin will be on the football show to give his thoughts on Maguire, amongst other things, and Dundalk, strange times there as well. David Snaid's going to join us and give us his assessment of Peak Six and their ownership since January 2018. It seems all is not well in Dundalk. 53106 is the text number. We're at Off the Ball on Twitter. We'll also bring you some of Kelly Harrington, who was in great form this morning on OTB AM. If you want to listen back to the full interview, OTB Sports in your app store is where you'll get the new app, and you can listen back there. Richie McCormack is with us. Good evening.
Joe, there's too much news, absolutely too much news happening this evening, and I'm just going to pack it in and leave it to you and Will.
Great. Good night to you, Richie McCormack. Thank you.
Thank you. Cheers.
Thank you. Will O'Callaghan, good evening to you.
Evening, lads. How are things?
Yeah, good to have you with us. Let's get straight in then, Richie, because I suspect the Harry Maguire news is of interest to everyone, really. Our news round is with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made of what matters. This was all expected initially, I think, to be adjourned. That was certainly the hope of Harry Maguire's legal team over in Greece. Mm. They felt they didn't have enough time to prepare for the hearing today. That was rejected by the judge. They proceeded and they got through it all very quickly, and they stayed until 7 o'clock local time to do so. Usually Greek courts, I was reading, wrap up by 3:30, but they were very determined to get all of this done. The verdict is in, and then there was a sentence as well. So bring us up to date.
Yeah, Harry Maguire found guilty today of aggravated assault, resisting arrest and repeated attempts of bribery. He's been handed a 21-month and 10-day suspended sentence. Suspended because the infringements are all minor and also is his first offence. The Manchester United captain was arrested on Mykonos following an incident on Thursday night. Maguire continues to plead his innocence and told the court today that his sister was injected with a suspected rape drug. Manchester United have come out in support of their captain in a statement. They say Maguire did not receive a fair trial and that he will appeal. Maguire was included in the England squad earlier today for next month's Nations League games with Iceland and Denmark, and Gareth Southgate was supportive of the ex-Leicester City man.
A decision that is not straightforward, and a decision that in the end I could only take on the information that I have. I've spoken with Harry. I have the insight to the story, which is very different to what's been reported. And in these instances, I think you can only make decisions on facts that you're aware of. Now, clearly, if facts change further down the line or information changes, then I have to review that decision. But I have a fantastic relationship with the boy. Harry has been outstanding character for us. I've no reason to doubt what he's telling me. And, you know, it's important he knows that he's got my support at this moment.
With the boy. He's 27 years old. So that was Southgate at 2 o'clock this morning. Harry Maguire has promptly released a statement saying, following the hearing, I've instructed my legal team with immediate effect to inform the courts that we will be appealing. I remain strong and confident regarding our innocence in this matter. If anything, myself, family and friends are the victims. #MUFC. Gareth Southgate speaking at 2 o'clock there today. I don't know, will the verdict subsequent to those comments change his inclusion of Maguire in the squad? We'll see. Will, it's a real mess to try and extrapolate what exactly happened. Certainly the claims of Maguire's camp are reasonably straightforward in so much as, you know, any of this is. They allege that his sister was injected by two Albanians. She was unconscious. Her eyes were rolling in her head. Everybody there was massively upset, as you can imagine, quite suddenly. the two Albanians allegedly ran off. There's a bit of a kerfuffle. The minibus that the Maguire camp had rented shows up. Everybody gets on. They're heading to a hospital. There's two cars behind them. They pull over. The two cars are police men into the bus. Arrests happen. It all seems to kick off. And then there's the alleged bribery or F the police, which Maguire denies, and do you know who I am? And the police then allegedly kicking Maguire in the leg, saying your career is over, and they deny that, and Maguire denies what they're saying, and it went to court today, and court decided everything the police said is correct, everything the Maguire camp are saying, presumably not correct, and you're getting 21 months suspended.
Yeah, I think you've summed up the two narratives pretty well there, Joe. Obviously, both contradict each other pretty much entirely from start to finish, but my first reaction would be that the three defendants weren't in court, and this was a court case that seemed to be pushed through pretty quickly to try and get a verdict and then a sentence completed by the end of today. As you mentioned, they stayed until the very end of court time to get it completed, and the three defendants were basically tried in absentia today. So it was inevitable that an appeal was going to go in straight away after this. Harry Maguire and, you know, two of his family spent a couple of days in a prison cell last week on Thursday and Friday before they were released. And, you know, it's fairly clear that they have a story here which contradicts a lot of what the police have said officially on the record, including, you know, were police officers actually uniformed at the time that they approached Harry Maguire when this alleged assault took place. The bribery claims, it's claimed that they were made once he was taken back to a police station. And obviously it's he said, she said in terms of that. And, you know, the Maguires have their claim that he was assaulted, and that claim that the police said they were going to end his career by trying to injure him after he had allegedly said, do you know who I am? I've got plenty of money so I can bribe you. Even though it didn't sound a lot like Harry Maguire when it was recounted into the court earlier today. So absolutely inevitable that they were going to appeal this. I mean, there's very little chance that Harry Maguire was going to accept the best part of a couple of years in prison, which would pretty much mess up the rest of his career. But the one thing that really surprised me, Joe, was that Gareth Southgate named him in that Nations League squad this afternoon, because it was quite clear that the case was going to take place later in the day. And why not just wait or not comment on Maguire at all until at least the verdict and sentence have come in?
Yeah, maybe. They mightn't have been anticipating that it would all run off so quickly, I suppose. It seems to have caught everybody a bit off guard. Maguire, for his part, could simply take now the 21-month suspended sentence and leave it at that. You know, he doesn't have to appeal this. So clearly,
that's not going to happen.
He feels strongly and is arguing, you know, his innocence all the way. So he's going to appeal this. And I don't know, it's very hard to say too much more about it when we're not there. You know, I don't know what happened. And it's all a bit messy. And there's such contradictions in the two versions. You know, somebody... So one side is telling serious lies, and the Greek court have decided it's not the Greek police. So that's where we are on the Harry Maguire situation. I suspect it's one of these things as well. I mean, it is much ado about nothing as well. I mean, it's not the most serious incident. I mean, the fact is it's a suspended sentence because it's his first offence. And also, even though on paper they read as very serious crimes, they are misdemeanours in Greek law. So suspended sentence has been handed down. And that's Harry Maguire. Where are we going next, Richie?
On the other side of the law from Manchester United, Swedish police have thanked defender Victor Lindelöf for catching a thief who robbed an elderly woman. They said in a statement that a man riding a bike snatched a bag belonging to a woman in her 90s yesterday in the city of Västerås. Lindelöf ran after the suspect and held him until police arrived. Manchester United have confirmed the story. So a good news story out of Manchester United tonight. They're into the second period of extra time in Vilnius in the Europa League first round qualifier. It's currently Rittery 3, Derry City 2. Joe Thompson had given Derry City an 18th minute lead in the Lithuanian capital, but the host levelled 6 minutes before half time through Gitas Paulauskas. Paulauskas struck again 4 minutes after the break to put Rittery 2-1 in front, but Owen Toll made it 2-2 just before the hour. They went to extra time. Declan Devine telling his side just before the full-time whistle at 90 minutes, you will get another chance, you will get another chance. Donatas Kozlauskas put the host 3-2 up just after the restart. And so it remains around about 10 minutes to go in extra time. And it is, as we mentioned before, in all of these, just a one-legged affair. So it will be decided tonight.
Messi.
Certainly is, Joe. Lionel Messi has formally requested to leave Barcelona. The club have told reporters in Spain that they have received a fax from the Argentine playmaker outlining his wishes. Messi claims there's a clause in his contract allowing him to leave at the end of a season on a free transfer. Barca are countering, saying that that clause expired in June. Messi is going along with the FIFA interpretation of contract law for clubs, which said that they do expire at the end of the actual campaign this year. They've called an urgent board meeting to attend to the matter tonight.
Okay, see, I'm reeling here. I was chatting with Pat Nevin just before coming in there. We were talking about the Harry Maguire situation. We're now going to have to reach out to Pat at 9 o'clock, by the way.
The
yeah, we are going to get Pat back up at 9 o'clock and do it live now because so much has happened since. By the way, he definitely is looking at this whole Maguire thing and, you know, something smells a bit fishy here. And is there a degree of making an example of the famous footballer? Or are the police, you know, so fed up with behaviour of tourists that they're primed and ready to react to this kind of stuff, and they realise it's Maguire and they think, right, let's throw the book at this guy, you know? And his understanding of the type of personality Maguire is leaves him a bit surprised at the police account. So there's that. That's all going on.
David Moyler said the exact same earlier, Joe, and they would have been teammates and friends at Hull, and he said that he was on many nights out with Harry Maguire and that the behaviour that was described in this case, at least from David Moyler's sense of the man, was that it didn't sound a lot like Harry Maguire or his brother, who he knows quite well.
Okay. That's a definitely an informed account. At the same time, what, you have a public life, private life and a secret life. Maybe when your sister has been allegedly drugged and is unconscious and then some Greek police without uniforms trying to arrest you, maybe you do snap, you know, maybe all hell breaks loose because of the stresses of the circumstance. But yeah, I saw that by Myler as well. And I think the phrase he used was, I've seen Harry Maguire with a brimful before plenty of times. And he's not the sort of character that we're reading about in this instance. So
what is manageable in all this is that I would back what Will said earlier on. I don't think he should have been named in that England squad today. And I definitely don't think that Gareth Southgate should have gone on that soliloquy we heard earlier on praising the character of Harry Maguire. What needed to be done here, both for the England squad's point of view, which I know a lot of people listening might not necessarily care about, but also for Maguire more than anything, is to give him the headspace to deal with this, whether it comes out on the positive or negative end for him, and just get it out of the way. We've seen instances before of minor behavioural misdemeanours resulting in people being dropped from international squads, be it England or somebody else. This should be no different. He should be given a little bit of a period to deal with this. With the games coming up in early September, he'll barely played a game for Manchester United by the time they come around. He's probably better off out of the squad. Their games at Iceland and Denmark in the Nations League, I think they can be okay. And I don't think Gareth Southgate needs to be referring to him as the boy and somebody with a stupendous character, like about an hour before he's convicted.
Well, okay, I hear you. I mean, the point we can all agree on is you're right. Nobody cares about England's Nations League games against whoever it was.
They probably don't care about them, Joe.
Yeah. So whatever about that point. I mean, on the other side, when are the games? They're like Sunday week and Tuesday week. I think Harry Maguire has more than enough time to prepare, digest this and play a game of football. And also, he's saying, I'm innocent here. I'm appealing this. And so I've nothing to be ashamed of. I've given the manager my account. Maybe there's something to be said for Gareth Southgate to say, do you know what, I believe you, I'm sticking by you. Maybe that's good management too. The Southgate thing, I'm not that fussed by.
Does Gareth Southgate not look terrible then, Joe, if he does end up found guilty on the appeal?
I don't think so, do you? If Maguire says, I've been stitched up royally here, and I guarantee you this didn't happen, and Southgate says, do you know what, Harry, I trust you, I'm with you on this. I'm going to take your word for it. Does Southgate look that bad?
But it dominates literally everything around these two games from their point of view. Like, he's going to be doing nothing but fielding Harry Maguire questions. And you're probably going to have a situation, which should have happened today, whereby the press officer briefs the media just beforehand, almost in the same way that Stephen Donnelly's crew did the other day, which is to say, we're not going to be answering questions about this. Can we just concentrate on the game, please? And, you know, if they do happen to edge towards that, then they can take action or whatever action they see fit. But I think it's a situation that's easily avoided from their point of view, and probably the one that Maguire would benefit from taking a step away for a couple of weeks.
Maybe. I suspect Southgate said to him, listen, are you stressed? Do you want to run away from all this? And Maguire said no, based on Southgate including him. I don't think it's that unmanageable a situation, genuinely. Like, press conference, what about Harry Maguire? Southgate says, yeah, he's appealing it. He absolutely says he's not guilty, and therefore there's now a legal process open again because he's appealing it. Next question. Do you know what I mean? Like, they'll handle it. Sorry, but we've got sidetracked here. My point is, I was talking to Pat Nevin about all this.
Get him back on.
Yeah. Pat's going to be back on 9 o'clock to give the updated take on all of this. I hadn't seen the Lindelof news, by the way. That's amazing. That's amazing. And now you're just after telling me, you're just after breaking it to me, that Lionel Messi
has a fax machine.
has requested to leave Barcelona. This is legit. This is real.
Yeah, via fax, Joe. I think that's the important underlined fact here, via fax. In the year of our Lord, 2020, Lionel Messi, possibly the greatest footballer of all time, is scribbling onto a page, shoving it into a machine and selling it via fax to Barcelona's HQ.
They say it comes in threes. This is incredible. Will, Lionel Messi has formally requested to leave Barcelona. Do we think this is Messi leveraging his influence at Barcelona and he's now going to have them running to him and saying, Lionel, what do you want us to do? Name it and we'll do it. Or do you think this is legit and Messi wants to bow out following 8-2 in front of no fans? That is his sign-off from Barcelona. This is extraordinary news.
Yeah, look, I think it's probably the end of the road, to be honest, Joe. I think he's got to that point. He's leveraged them so many times before. He signed 9 different contract extensions across 17 seasons. So Messi knows how to get a new deal out of Barcelona. And his last one now becomes particularly interesting because there's a clause in there which either, in his eyes, allows him to walk away for free at the end of each year of the rolling contract, or Barcelona's solicitor has pulled off an absolute masterstroke and the pandemic has come in to help him too. And there's actually a date of somewhere in June, I think it's June the 30th, which might mean that they get away with this. But again, if a player is agitating to leave, and in the case of Messi, where he's so determined to leave the club, do you really want a Lionel Messi on your hands where the only way he can leave is if someone pays 700 million euro? Do you want to keep him that badly that if he's faxed to say that he wants to walk away from the club that you're going to keep him? I mean, he seems to be pretty uninspired by what Ronald Koeman said to him last week. It was widespread reported in the Spanish press last Thursday and Friday that Koeman rang Messi and had a conversation, and Messi said he was still determined to leave the club after everything that's happened this season. And you can't really blame him with the cycle of the club probably since Neymar left in 2017, that Messi would want to make the most of the last maybe 2 or 3 years of his peak that he has left. Then add to that that Ronald Koeman rang his best mate in the squad, Luis Suarez, yesterday and told Suarez to go find another club and that they'll rip up his contract if he wants to move. Again, Arturo Vidal, a player that Messi's been quite close to, has been told to go and look for another club. So it's very clear that Ronald Koeman is taking this in a different direction. I'm sure what Barcelona were hoping for, though, Joe, is if he was going to leave, that they could negotiate a fee, even if it wasn't his buyout of 700 million. If they could have got 200 or 300 million, that money could have probably been used badly by the Barcelona board, but at least used to try and pay some of their wages for next season and to try and get some transfers in. If Messi walks away for free after they've been paying him 54 million euro for the last couple of seasons, it's an absolute disaster for them.
I just can't.
It's a very difficult one to take.
Messi, not at Barcelona.
I know, it's a very difficult one to take. But on the other side of that, when you're Ronald Koeman, setting aside the fact, and I know it's a very huge thing to set aside, what other team would be happy to build around a 33-year-old?
Yeah, I guess
if you're going in as a new manager.
If you're Koeman, though, you might say realistically, I'm going to be sacked before Messi's 35. So why don't I just try and inspire Messi for the next 2 years and to get him to do great things? I suspect Koeman was genuine when he sat down with Messi and said, I want to keep you. I think if you have enough legs around Messi, then for the next 2-3 years, he can still be absolutely sensational. I would think Koeman wanted to keep Messi. If Koeman was given the job for 10 years guaranteed, then I suspect he might have been more inclined to regenerate and suck it up for a year or two and let Messi go and get players in and try and build towards something. But I think if you're Koeman, this is short term. Xavi is going to take your job any moment, effectively. So I would say him losing Messi and Suarez, he's starting from rock bottom now.
Yeah, and like Koeman knows, no matter what happens, he's already been told by one of the presidential candidates in Font that if Font gets elected ahead of Bartomeu next year at their delayed elections when they take place in April of next year, he's gone. He's going to put Xavi in place even if Koeman wins the treble. And when you look at that Barcelona squad and you look at the lack of money that they have to actually reinvest, in all likelihood, they're looking to try and get people off the payroll currently. They're paying an obscene amount of money. I think it's nearly around 400 million in wages across the club currently. Yeah. Like, if they don't get that figure down dramatically, they're not going to be able to buy anyone. And even though Messi will free up 50 odd million, which they'd be able to spend elsewhere, their track record of the current Barcelona board to reinvest the money has been atrocious. They've spent the Neymar money terribly. We saw in that semi-final, the three players who were bought with the Neymar money all sat on the bench during it. So I think unless Koeman is willing to actually take the risk that Bartomeu stays as president next year, he's not going to be around long enough for the rebuild. And so from that point of view, I can understand totally why Lionel Messi would be agitating for a move away, whether that's to go to PSG for a couple of seasons or Man City. I'd imagine they're the only two likely locations for him.
Okay.
Middle East.
Oh, that'd be terrible. Oof. So to recap, if you're just tuning in, there's a lot going on this evening. Harry Maguire has been found guilty of aggravated assault, resisting arrest and repeated attempts of bribery. He's been given a 21-month suspended sentence, so he does avoid jail, and he has promptly said that he's appealing that. We have Lionel Messi formally requesting to leave Barcelona this evening, and Victor Lindelof saved a woman's handbag. I can't take any more. Richie, what's next?
Munster's worst fear is confirmed today, with Orji Snyman requiring surgery on his knee. Their new signing sustained an ACL tear just 7 minutes into his debut against Leinster on Saturday. Snyman's to meet with a specialist before surgery goes ahead. Dave Kilcoyne and Jean Klein are also facing spells on the sideline with respect of ankle and neck problems. And sticking with matters rugby, Pro 14 organisers say the 2020-21 season will begin as a 12-team tournament. The Pro 12 returns. Earlier today, South African side Southern Kings say they'll be suspending activities for the remainder of the calendar year. The Pro 14 say they don't foresee any cross-border games involving South African sides happening before 2021. Talks are ongoing with South African rugby on the Kings and Cheetahs' future involvement. The turmoil at Dundalk continues this evening. Joe, interim boss John Gill, formerly an assistant there, has confirmed that he's left the SSE Airtricity Premier Division club. His departure comes 5 days after that of head coach Vinnie Perth. It's reported that Filippo Giovagnoli is poised to take over until the end of the season. Dundalk have called a press conference for tomorrow to potentially confirm that news. Gill tweeted in the past hour to say he had no choice given recent events but to leave the club. I'm extremely sad, he says. It's come to this. I wish the club, staff, players and fans every success in the future.
We'll have football journalist David Snaid on the football show to talk about the situation at Dundalk. Peak Six took over at Dundalk in January 2018. Increasingly, there are question marks over their ownership. What's your read on the situation, Rich?
Not a good one. Their involvement, although seemingly kind of distant and benign to begin with, has creeped more and more towards the pitch over the course of the last 12 months, resulting in what we've seen with Vinnie Perth's departure on Thursday last. There had been rumours that all was not well going into this season, and that goes back as far as well into the start of the year, into March. It's continued on. Nothing's happened in the interim to quell the disquiet that's gone on in the town. And I think it's only been exacerbated by the news coming in. Like, David will tell you this later on, that Giovagnoli has reportedly told those around him that he's on a kamikaze mission, that essentially he just has to accept this job, because what chance is he going to have anything similar in the foreseeable future, having previously been in charge of summer camps at AC Milan and a New York City affiliated camp in New York as well. Like, it's not good. There are better managers out there, more experienced managers out there. And at the club, like, Alan Reynolds was in charge of Waterford and did quite a good job there before John Sheridan's arrival. He's still working there, I think. I don't know if John Gill's departure will affect that as well. But there are people that are in a better position to do a better job for Dundalk. And they seem to be spiraling. And for what reason and what the thought process is of Peak Six, I don't know. It would be interesting, and I'd imagine a lot of Dundalk fans would want to hear tomorrow if anybody from that board is willing to speak about the direction of the club, because the direction of the club as things stand is heading south.
Okay, well, like I said, David Snaid on later on. I know he was talking to some of the players, and Giovagnoli held his first training session today, and it wasn't as bad as they feared. So there's that, if you're looking for
that's a ringing endorsement.
Crumb of comfort. Yeah. Michael Darren McCauley.
Yeah, he was on this morning on OTBAM, and he's backed GPA proposals for a split season. Under those proposals, the intercounty season would run from February to July, leaving a period from July to December to hold club activity only. The players' group is hopeful of discussing the proposal when they meet Croke Park bosses later this month. And McCauley told OTBAM he would like a lot of the focus put on club players.
I haven't seen the ins and outs of it, of the proposal, but it makes sense. Like people always feel sorry for the intercounty players during this. I don't know, I think if anyone who knows what's going on, it's much worse for the club players. They get absolutely shafted having to get themselves unbelievable shape for April, and then they're buzzing, and then they obviously hopefully win a championship round or two, and then it's like, okay, let's just hit the training ground for another 4 or 5 months, and it could be in the work, me in a different place at that stage. So yeah, look, it's tough. I think it seems to make sense. The split season stuff is as I said, I hope going to happen at some stage. But you don't know, the wheels of the GAA can move slowly sometimes. So hopefully the cogs can speed up.
It's something we'll chat to Paul Early about later on as well, as part of our conversation with him after 8 o'clock. One of the points he made, Will, and I presume it can be worked out if they do go with the split season, is that, you know, it's potentially a long time for the club player with no games. You know, you could be talking 6 months, and there might need to be some rounds of competition or fixtures where there's games without the county players. And then the other side of the coin is the county players then are effectively going to play all year round. They'll be in club action or county action. They actually won't get a break at all.
Yeah, I suppose like the argument probably from an inter-county player currently, Joe, would be that they're probably playing year-round anyway when you consider the pre-season competitions this year got underway in November and most players would be out with their club until late October, even if they go out in the early rounds of the knockout stages, and then they're straight back around for the National Football or Hurling League and then play a championship right through the summer. I think the split season makes absolutely perfect sense. I think when it comes to the club, and this is an easy sell if it means that they've got a longer period with their county players, will have to be an acceptance that the league competition without county players have to be meaningful for the club player without the county player in and of itself. And that takes a bit of a shift in mindset, because in some counties it's always seen as, well, the action only really gets underway when we've got our full panel available to us. Those competitions need to be treated in a meaningful way from the club player. The trade-off is that you get extra weeks in a better part of the year to play your club championships. I think one thing players have enjoyed this time round, even with the unusualness of the pandemic, has been able to get out and play games, particularly at the start of this month when the weather was a little bit better, and conditions should be better when they're finishing up their campaigns in late September or early October. If that's the trade-off they have to make, I think it makes perfect sense. I think for inter-county players, they'll enjoy the inter-county season being slightly more condensed. I'm sure there'll be those who will bemoan All-Ireland finals in July if it goes through, but it didn't kill anybody when they went back to August. And I think having the season in a shorter period of time will actually add to the excitement. And I also think having a longer period without inter-county into the next year is a good way to build excitement for coming back the year after. So yeah. I think it's very hard to argue against the split season, to be honest.
I'm torn. I got to say I'm torn. So February to July, we'd have inter-county, and then July to December, we'd have club. Like, all through August, all through September, you're just, like, even at the moment, would you not miss inter-county at the moment? I know we're saying, God, the club, it's great, right? It's brilliant. But, like, no one's, we're not talking about GAA in the show. We're not talking about club. Nobody cares about the club championship outside of their own county. You are giving up such a presence. You know, you think about the presence that GAA has in our lives. It's the inter-county game that people love. We love the league when it comes back. There's great excitement there. It's who's going well, who's not going well. Maybe it drags on a touch. And then you have the summer of GAA, the controversies, the colour, going to games, all of that stuff. All of that run off by July, and you're saying that doesn't come back until the following February. Do you not give up this massive presence that it has? And it, presence also is a recruitment tool. You know, kids watching the inter-county teams playing want to play county themselves. Do we need to think carefully here about what we are giving up? Absolutely, a solution has to be found for the club player, for sure, because it's just, it's unsustainable, and that's been widely discussed for a long time now, and I'm fully on board with that. But split season and just July done until the following February, I mean, for me, Will, that's a big thing to give up, and I don't know, the reality of that, we're not talking about GAA then for 6-7 months of the year.
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes for me, I don't actually mind the break away from it. When it comes to, say, the soccer season and when the Premier League finishes, we don't really mind the 2 to 3 months between the seasons.
That's a month and a half, really, to 2 months. Well, that's 2 months. Okay, we're talking. Say July 20th, finals are done. You're not gonna see an inter-county player in his inter-county jersey again until February. I don't know.
If you're an NFL fan at the moment, Joe, you'll watch a season that takes place between September and the end of January, early February. You'll then switch off and just have the draft to keep you happy between then and the next autumn when the season comes back around. I think it builds up the excitement for the next season. If anything, I think we probably have too much Gaelic games at the moment. It drags out for too long. And condensing down the season, particularly in May and June, is actually going to be quite helpful, I think. Because one of the things that really drags are the early rounds of the Provincial Football Championship, which are run off at a couple of games a weekend in early May and into mid-May. Mm. I actually think when these seasons are cut back and every week you've got meaningful fixtures coming week on week. And we're going to get a taste of that if inter-county happens later this year, where if you look at the schedule, when it is cut back, you're talking about meaningful games every single week. I actually think people will enjoy the February to July period an awful lot more, because at the moment, I think a lot of people don't come alive until the end of the national leagues anyway. Mm. Like, realistically, how many people have a huge interest in what's happening outside of their own county, or just a general feeling of what's happening, until it gets to the final stages of the league and into the championship? This way, maybe the leagues will become a little bit more important if the championships are refined a little bit too in the next 2-3 years. I actually don't think losing a few weeks is going to make a massive difference.
Rich?
It'll give the club game a bit of space to breathe. I mean, you talked about there the fact that it's going to be barren land essentially between the months of July and February. I don't think that's necessarily the case. We've seen that if the club game is given the pedestal that in often cases it does deserve in terms of media coverage, whether that's live games on TV or on the radio, etc., that it does attract an audience and it can attract interest.
Has
and
it can though, attract. Like, have you been gripped by the club championship?
I think it has. Yeah, I think people have been gripped by the club championship.
What games?
Don't be asking me for specific games.
Well, no,
Joe.
Let's be honest. Like, what games have you been gripped by?
I'd be honest, Joe. You'd be surprised at how little sport I've actually watched, full stop. Okay. But regardless, it has found room on the schedule and it has found an audience.
I don't know if it has, actually. I don't think it has. I think we say it has. I don't think it has. I have not spoken to anyone, lots of sports fans in my life, who are on to me about the club championships.
Born forced with nothing else to watch, well, Joe. Between the months of July and February.
Let's have a chat about it. We'll do something on the show on it some night. Sorry, I've railroaded your news around there. Is there a last story?
I'm used to it.
I'll bet. Last story you want to bring us?
Derry City, I'll just bring you up to date, out of the Europa League. They've been beaten 3-2 after extra time by Riteri in Lithuania. That winner coming just a minute after the restart in extra time for the Lithuanian side. And up to 20,000 fans could attend next month's European Super Cup. UEFA has given the go-ahead for Budapest Puskas Arena to operate at 30% capacity. Champions League winners Bayern Munich will face Europa League winners Sevilla on September 24th. And as I say, up to 20,000 of the 67,000 capacity Puskas Arena could have people inside.
Richie McCormick, as ever, thank you.
Thank you all.
Will O'Callaghan, happy birthday, Will.
Thanks, Joe. Cheers,
there
lads.
You go. We didn't forget you. We got Kieran McGeehan talking to us next.
The OTB Podcast Network.